being late. I was messing with the machine. The machine. It's the machines. I'm Kevin, your host. True Wealth is sponsored by Coins Plus in Spokane, as always. Coins Plus has been in business a couple decades, 20 years, buying and selling all forms of rare coins and precious metals. Broker, we're a precious metals broker-dealer depository service, which means brokerage is obvious. You just act as a middleman dealer. We own it. We sell it. And depository service, we offer the highest-rated privately held depository service in the United States or Western region. We've been dealing in coins and rare coins since the early 90s. That's an area that I have to admit is very near and dear to my heart. I'm a serious collector, an avid collector, and an avid numismatic investor personally. I believe in rare coins, collectible coins. They're hard to get. There's always a really strong market for them. Even now that everybody is full-blown bonkers over the stock market, folks. I mean, wow. Unbelievable what they're getting out of that thing. It is just soaring for record highs. It is really a crazed maniac's market. And personally, you know, I just, wow. I don't know what to tell you on stuff like that other than what goes up that hard has to come down. I think history has proven itself very clearly in the market. We've never actually had a run like this. This is the run that we're getting in the markets lately is very similar to the dot-com craze kind of a thing. It's very casino. It was interesting. I was talking to a very intelligent engineer the other day, a doctor of engineering in aerospace. For down in Colorado, guy I've known for years and years, very intelligent. And he was talking about his retirement account. And I mean, he was doing more of the talking about money. I was just trying to catch up from old times. And he says, isn't the stock market a lot like a casino? And I said, man, you're a pretty smart guy. He's like, well, that's what it seems like to me. He goes, you're just throwing your money out there and hoping it's going to come back to you better than what you did. And he's like, and you've got all these other people that are chasing this. And he explains it. And I said, man, you really do have a clear perspective of that. And then we discussed, you know, he's got a solid, sound perspective of hard assets. And the whole thing, the thing that I've done in my life, and I feel very blessed, and I've accumulated a lot of assets over the decades from the time I was in banking, is I tried to avoid debt. Well, I'll be honest, when I was a young buckaroo out of college, I got debt. I mean, it's just inevitable at certain times of your life. I had a wife who was fully bedridden with rheumatoid arthritis when I was, you know, I had my first child. I was married at 20, first child at 21. My wife, as soon as she had my first child, she had this rheumatoid arthritis flare and was basically bedridden for years. She couldn't get up. Our kids learned to take care of themselves so young, you wouldn't believe it. My daughter was feeding herself at 1, and I mean literally crawling up on the cupboards, opening the cupboard, on the cabinets, opening the cabinets, getting in the fridge, pouring herself stuff. Just the way it was. And then, because of that, we had student loans and whatnot. And so we started out life with a few strikes against us, but I did make it a primary focus to get rid of debt. Luckily, God put me in the banking industry straight out of college. Even though my background was heavily weighted in mathematics and statistics, and I just got obsessed with debt. And I became obsessed with, you know, debt structure and interest rates on loans, you know, in other words, how to pay them off, how to prepay. It just became an obsession of mine. So later on, when God had a financial plan for our lives and started to bless us more with money, we worked hard to become debt-free, ended up with a beautiful home debt-free, which, of course, I sold and built a bigger, nicer one. But of course, I sold it when the market was just totally terrible in like 2010 or something. But Yeah, we all do that stuff. It was interesting times. I've got a lot of hindsight wisdom as well, but I had someone ask recently about debt, and that is a very interesting question biblically, and I think I might have touched on this just a little bit the other day. But the point of is the Bible is very clear that debt's not good stuff, right? And you get a lot of people that go, I don't know if you'd want to call it full purist, but I think they go to a little too much of an extreme, I would say. I think that it all boils down to what your goal is and what your intentions are and what your net liabilities and net worth is, your liabilities versus your assets. And you do have to be careful because you can have a big asset secured by a small amount of debt, and under the right circumstances, you can lose the big asset for a small amount of debt, which really doesn't make a lot of sense. So essentially, debt in general is something to be avoided. But when it comes down to things like life, livelihood, a business, and a proper dwelling, I don't think it's unreasonable to access debt. There's people that will rent forever because they believe that they can never acquire enough cash to purchase a home. I know a lot of people like this, believers. They just live that way. So they spend their entire lives renting, okay? And what they do is they die at the end of their life with no assets. And a home can be, there's so many different things about home ownership, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, life, liberty, and the ownership of property, same thing. And owning your own property is critical to your liberty. And, you know, what I have things come to mind, a lady I spoke to recently that's, you know, I've multiple people that are fighting battles with the government about what they can or cannot do with their land. That's another topic for another day. We've lost a lot of liberties, folks, and just in my lifetime. I obviously haven't lived in other eras, but I believe that in my lifetime, I'm 51, I believe that we've lost more liberty in my lifetime than in any other lifetime since the inception of the United States. The changes in laws and tonality and absolute the aggression, the communistic mentality. When I was a kid, communism was we were heavily warned against it. We hated it. It was a bad thing. And you see jokes now, you know, kind of the McCarthyistic era. I was obviously quite a bit later than that. But we learned what communism was. We learned why it was bad. Now, how do they teach you that communism is bad? By teaching you that liberty is good. You have to teach that liberty is good to say communism is bad. This is why the schools won't teach that communism is bad anymore, because they can't tell their kids that liberty is good. They don't even give them a proper comprehension of what liberty is. You get these kids that are literally sitting on college campuses demanding their free space so they don't have to be offended or listen to offensive speech. Or they think that their First Amendment right is to shout down other people. Folks, this is bad. I mean, there's a rebel tyrant spirit in the world, and it's from the devil. It comes to steal and kill and destroy. Shouting people down is not edifying. Everything from God is edifying. You may have conflict and you may have confrontation, but you don't shout people down. And what they do is they bottleneck hate speech. It's white supremacy, and it's you're a racist, and you're a sexist, and you're an anti-feminist, and you're a hedonist or whatever, xenophobic. And, you know, and then that all makes it okay to shout me down. not that I'm those things, correct, right? Okay, good. But the point is, that makes it okay to shout another person down because you don't agree with their views? That it's okay to squelch them and shut them down? Do you not understand that this country alone was built by those people who were contrary to popular belief? They were unorthodox, non-conforming. They were the ones, that's what the British government was trying to kill and squelch and destroy, and they did. The British government killed a lot of men on this land. A lot of people died. And they came in full force, hard and heavy. Luckily, we created forms of war that were no longer traditional. Hey guys, let's all stand in a straight line in the middle of a wide open field and shoot each other or shoot at each other, while the British happen to be the ones that have specialized in creating this form of war. They have better weaponry, better training, and far better accuracy. Let's go stand out and give the British target practice. No, as soon as the rebels, the American rebels, refused to fight this way anymore, they were called everything under the sun. They were called cowards, and they were called everything, okay? And thank God for that, because we're here today. If they would have played along by the British rules, we'd be dead meat. The Romans sort of did the same thing, but they were a lot, I think, they were heavier. They had heavy artillery, and they were doing things with catapults and firing pitch, you know, from trees and burning entire villages. They were nasty people. Very, very nasty people. Hardcore. But the fact of the matter is, it's always that person who is unpopular to listen to. That's the one we need to listen to. I'm not saying some guy with a vile mouth. We know what vulgarity is. We know what improper speech is. We don't need that. But it's the person, it's the underdog that brings us the message every time. I mean, and when things are bad, who fights for change? It's that small, still small voice that comes out of a man, the underdog that brings it up, that lifts us up. And so with this new shout it down spirit, I don't know if how many of you have read the book 1984 by George Orwell. I wanted to say Orson Welles, but George Orwell. It was required reading when I was in high school, because I graduated in 1984, which was the name of the book. And the parallels, when I read it back then, it just was pretty, it was kind of gray and far out. It wasn't kind of gray, it was super gray and very far out. And now it's there. I mean, it's severely prophetic, incredibly prophetic, and it refers a lot to technology that now exists. Things that were absolutely impossible at the time, almost impossible to comprehend, that now exist, which is incredible. But they literally had the thought police. They were controlling people by their thoughts. This is where we are now. You are held accountable for your opinions. You are judged for your beliefs, okay? It used to be that a white supremacist had a right to be a white supremacist. And in some cases, I think the Black Lives Matter are black supremacists or black something. I mean, they're fighting just as hard the other way. And I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm not defending either side. I'm just saying factually what I think I see. But it's like if somebody yells, the Black Panthers scream out about black superiority or whatever it is, it's hailed as triumph. You know, it's hailed as victory and liberty and you know, incredible civil movement and blah, blah, blah. If a white person says white supremacy, they're crushed, destroyed. And now we're destroying people for their speech. And you probably know what I'm talking about when Ben Shapiro and this Milo Jovanovich or whatever his name is, Milo, or even Ann Coulter or whoever, when they speak at these universities and these kids come out and scream them down, they refuse to let them speak. Are you kidding me? Because why? They speak common sense, or because they speak in the language of these kids' parents? In some cases, these kids are in a state of sinful rebellion. They need to be contained and controlled. We're told that colleges are this this think tank, that they're this budding zone, that they're this place for kids to grow and mature away from their parents. Sadly, these kids have spent their lives in public education with their minds being cultivated and prepared for these days. And their minds have been cultivated to just look to accept what the teacher says wholeheartedly, hook, line, and sinker. If they don't, they're going to find themselves in a very painful position, a very uncomfortable position without, you know, who knows, without school, in the principal's office or whatever. So they learn that the teacher is a god, little g god. And they begin to consume everything that teacher says to them as fact. And then they also begin to introduce immorality and things like this. And then these kids go off to school, and what do? They pump them full of booze, they party, they do crazy stuff. And the college, the school's telling them all this wacko stuff. Even back when I was in my first year of college, I remember English 100 level English, you know, where you're writing papers and you're supposed to give speeches. And I had not even become a believer yet. And I was one of two people in my class that stood against abortion. The whole rest of the class was for it. Don't ask me why I knew it was wrong. I just did. I had morality tucked inside of me. Well, I know why, because I did pray to receive Christ when I was in third grade and then forgot immediately. But his spirit, you know, dwelt within me. But I knew it was wrong. But I wasn't a believer. I didn't have good ammunition. And I did a really bad job of researching and defending my position. And I remember when I gave my speech, the English teacher did a really good job of absolutely belittling me and mocking me and besmirching me in front of the class, and allowed the class to do the same. And then people who got up there pro-abortion, who were terribly unprepared and terribly ignorant, had the teacher's full support and protection from attacks by the class. And, you know, that's the kind of peer pressure that they use to persuade you. I didn't come away from that thinking I should have supported abortion. I came away from that just being angry and wounded and knowing that it wasn't right. There had to be a better way. And I still think to this day, that's ultimately the way, you know, it should be handled, is just with respectful dialogue. And that's what I'm talking about with this shouting people down stuff. So I've heard a fair amount about this lately, and I just wanted to touch on it. The debt thing, again, folks, the thing with debt is, you know, assets versus liabilities is one. In other words, if I have $1 million in debt and $10 million in assets, and you'd say, well, then pay off the $1 million in debt. Well, what if the $1 million in debt is, or what if the $10 million in assets is all in the form of, you know, illiquid real estate, and you'd have to sell a $5 million property to pay off $1 million debt, and maybe that property produces income or whatever, I don't know. But all my time in banking, I saw a lot of this. So if you're securing debt to secure a well-priced home to support your family, you need to be wise. A lot of people don't understand. The average person only stays in a home 7 years in America. And a lot of people always say they're going to stay there forever. And some do, but most don't. And they have different kinds of mortgages. If your average mortgage is a 30-year fixed rate, and if you have less than, and I don't know, I'll go over this for the person who doesn't know, and you usually need now at least 10% down, They may still do them for less than that. When the market was exploding, they were doing them for zero down. But let's just say they want 10% down, and to get the loan. And if you don't have 20% down, if you have less than 20% down, they on a mortgage, they have what's called PMI insurance, private mortgage insurance. It's supposed to be a separate slush fund to protect the government, believe it or not, from loss on low collateralized loans. However, here's the problem. The problem is the government doesn't take any risk. The government guarantees the loans, hypothetically, supposedly, for these low downs. But what's happened is all the liability gets carried over to the block holder, the person that owns the loans. Nobody gets to go back to the government and collect. Trust me, when I was a regional manager at Bank of America, we tried. No go. So if you have less than 20% down on a mortgage, you're going to have to pay private mortgage insurance. It's an absolute, complete, total ripoff. I have a relative who has about 100, and she got a farm home loan, okay? These sound really good. They say, hey, these are for people who are extra poor or have less down, and it sounds like such a great deal. We're going to help you get into that house because you just can't afford it. So what they do with the farm home loan is they, believe it or not, they give you this ridiculously higher rate by like 3 points. So they take someone from 4.4 to 7.4. So and a huge portion of that, what's called reserve income from that, goes into the pocket of the broker. So they charge you on farm home loans. I'm not talking FHA. I'm talking farm home, which is supposed to be a really neat program to help the down and out. The Bible talks about not oppressing the poor for money, okay? And this is a prime way that they do it. PMI insurance is a biblically wrong program that is designed by our government to fleece the poor of their wealth. It is designed to oppress the poor for money. There are no claims ever filed on it. No one ever collects. It's supposed to have guaranteed Congress against all, guaranteeing all these low down payment mortgages. Well, the money from PMI is immediately swept out. People are paying exorbitant amounts on their mortgages. In so many cases, the reason people cannot afford the mortgage payment is because of the PMI. In other words, if you have a $140,000 loan and say your payment before taxes and insurance is, say, $1,000, And let's say taxes and insurance add $300 a month to it. So now you're at $1,300 a month. PMI insurance on a farm home loan is like $240 a month. So it's like 16% or whatever of the total balance, monthly balance. You're paying like 16% a month of the payment in PMI insurance. Well, it just pushes you past what you could ever afford. And they don't calculate it. When they don't calculate it into debt to income ratio when qualifying you for the loan. In addition to that, so that's a farm home loan and that's the PMI issue. And every single person out here who has a mortgage that they put less than 20% down on, has PMI insurance on their mortgage. If you've bought a house like this, well, and the other thing on farm home loan, they will not let you get out of that PMI for 7 years. And you say, well, how do you get out of the PMI? In a normal mortgage, what you do is you go get the home reappraised and you show that there is at least 20% equity in that home. And what that means is if you had a $100,000 home, that means you owe less than $80,000. So if you first bought the house with a 95% loan-to-value mortgage, which meant you only put 5% down, over time, the equity increase in the home will build equity to the point when that equity becomes 20% of the home's value, of the current appraised home's value, you can technically, legally qualify to have the PMI just removed, dropped, and stop paying it. On farm home, they won't allow it. If you have a mortgage out there that you put 5 or 10% down on or a VA loan or anything like that, in the last, you know, 5, 6, 3, 2 years, whatever. You need to look at that and say, am I paying PMI? The answer is yes, you are. Now, you're going to see taxes and insurance in there. They used to call it the PITI payment. That was principal plus interest plus taxes plus insurance, okay? That's normal. It's the PMI that's bad. So you should get your loan statement out, dig it out, look at your loan agreement. There's always a declarations page that has a big calculation box that'll explain things. And then somewhere around there, it'll talk about your PMI insurance. I'm bringing this up because you can very likely get that PMI insurance removed. If you are taking good care of your house, maybe you're in an area where property values have gone up. You just have to make sure your property value would appraise for 20% more than the loan amount. So that's important. One other way, you know, and then if you're talking about debt, it's important also, instead of paying off debt sometimes, if you came across, say, a windfall, I helped a gal with this a while ago. She came across like $15,000 and wanted to pay off debt. I said, wait a minute. If you put that money down on your mortgage, I think we figured out that you can reduce your PMI payment by like $240 a month or $220, which is technically going to save you at least $4,500 or $4,600 a year and reduce your outgo, and you'll be able to function better. And she agreed, and we did that. So just get a handle on this stuff, folks. It's called being a good steward. You need to know. You need to know the interest rates of any debt. A lot of people are like, I don't like debt. It's bad. I'm not going to think about it. I want to act like I don't have it. Folks, in this world, you got it. I'm sorry to break the news to you, but we are in a world that absolutely revolves around debt at a level that no nation, you are living in a time unlike any other. No nation in the history of the world has ever even remotely touched the amount of debt that we have. Not even fractionally. Okay. We have taken this so far. So realize that you're part of this system. If you've been able to live debt-free outside of the system, and you don't live in a old cardboard shack somewhere, and you don't ride around on a donkey, then more power to you. You know, I'm proud of you. If you are riding on something one step up from an old donkey and you're living in a, you know, old rundown bait shack at the end of some dirt road, then maybe that's not exactly what God had in mind for you. You got to think about this. No matter how poor anybody ever gets, you can always afford soap. And God does care about cleanliness and orderliness in our lives. There's many scriptures about it. I had a friend, or still do, I just haven't talked to him in a long time, whose wife was very bad at housekeeping. They bought a beautiful Cape Cod home. The first thing she did is she wanted to change the wallpaper. While they were moving in, she got a wallpaper scorer and went through and just destroyed this beautiful wallpaper before they'd even moved in. Of course, didn't have time to tear it off the wall, so it sat like that for years. And the house eventually filled up with boxes, and because she never really unpacked. And then the boys were, you know, pretty a little bit challenging. So she'd pile them in front of the TV all the time. The house was absolute terrorized mess. There were more dirty dishes than I've ever seen in a house. And she had pizza boxes stacked very high because she fed the boys pizza all the time. They all grew up to struggle with their weight. And then as things got worse and worse, and the guy was trying to run his business, the wife was, and this is just my observation, but the wife was constantly running off on mission trips. You know, this mission, that. Leaving the husband with 5 kids and his own business to run. I think 5, maybe 4, whatever that was, a bunch of boys. And as I watch this, it's like, this is not right. God does not call us to be this way. We've got a structure in the home of a husband and a wife and the way things are supposed to be. And if the man's running a business, the wife should be watching the kids, etc. I mean, there are definitely gifts and talents, but God has a very specifically clear system, and women are far better at handling kids than men are typically. The court systems in Washington don't agree, but I think that God agrees. I think that it's very obvious. I think a lot of these courts in the state of Washington, when people are getting divorced, are trying to go for this 50-50 custody plan. And I think it's good, you know, to protect the guy as far as letting him have decent access to a kid. But they've got all these false studies that come out that claim that, you know, it's better for the kid if he lives 50% at mom's and 50% at dad's during the school year. And, you know, that's just not right. It's not good. You talk to any kid going through that, they'll never say, it's great, I love it. Every one of them is either hates it, or they'll say, well, whatever, I'm used to it. I can't really think about it. It's just what I do. And God made a system, and we need to honor that system. But the couple I was talking about a minute ago, you know, the gal, it just kept going on and on and on like this. And eventually some, you know, things had to give, and they did give. And there was a meltdown in the marriage, and the church was supporting, in my opinion, the wrong side of it, because the guy never wanted to complain about his wife. He didn't feel comfortable doing that. And, you know, the wife played some games that way. But, you know, where I was going with that, God cares about orderliness and cleanliness, okay? Do you think the corners of heaven are going to be full of garbage and muck and dirt, and God's going to be going, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't get to that yet. You know, obviously there probably won't be any decomposition there. The second law of thermodynamics doesn't apply there. But the point is, everything to do with God is beautiful and holy and pure. And we need to realize that in our lives, we need to seek him and have him guide us in the ways of purity, without a doubt. And I think one of those is to be faithful with little. If we treat the things he gives us well, you look at, man, I'm kind of going all over the place today. When I was in banking as a manager, as a branch manager, we had a practice of sending somebody out to observe a candidate's vehicle while we interviewed them on the inside. And we had like a 5-point questionnaire that asked all kinds of questions about the vehicle. It'll tell you everything about a candidate. Yes, it may not be their vehicle. We ask, why not? What do you drive? Blah, blah, blah. You find out maybe they've been in a wreck. Maybe they don't have the money to fix it. Maybe they're driving mom and dad's car. Why are you driving your mom and dad's car? Well, technically, that's where I live, and the guy's 33 years old, and he's still living at home with mom and dad, you know, and that kind of stuff. That tells us a lot. What else it really tells us, if it is their car, is the level of cleanliness they keep. In a lot of cases, it was appalling. It's something I've never struggled with, to be candid. I can get a little cluttery, but I like things clean. We would see vehicles that were so filthy and so disorganized and discombobulated that it would literally tell us that we were getting an insight, a good insight into who this person was from the way they take care of their vehicles. So if man can see it, God can see it. I think it's important to understand we have to respect everything he gives us. We've got to make our earth, our environment, better. And when we're coming back, you know, with all kinds of, you know, when we're worried about the environment and keeping things healthy and clean, we also have to keep our own house in order. I think that's really important. I believe that's a biblical principle. When we, you know, talk about debt a little bit more, here's where a lot of the mentality goes. Proverbs 22:7 says, the rich rules over the poor, and the borrower is slave of the lender. I think that that is probably one of the most used verses against debt out there, at least from my experience. And it's true, and it's partially right. I think what it should say is the rich rules over the poor, and the borrower can become the slave of the lender. There is a mentality, and I can tell you after spending years in the banking, and I know I talk about that, but that's just a fact. and especially what I used to call consumer finance. Okay, this is a person's ability, tendency, whatever program to consume money in easy, bite-sized pieces, if you will. $1,000 signature loans and $1,500 credit cards and all this kind of stuff. Those are the borrowers who often became slaves of the lender. They have no sense of paying it back, and that's why they go after the brand new youth. I mean, folks, they literally send credit cards to these kids beyond imagination. And kids will go out, they'll rack these things up, and they have no understanding of paying it back. They don't understand the interest. The other problem that gets these kids is they're convinced that when they graduate from college, they're going to have all this money and it's all going to be easy and they're going to pay it all off. They don't understand the student loans, the taxes. They don't understand how hard it is to get a job when you get out of college. It's not that easy. Trust me, I went through it when times were different. Kids are really struggling now. So we have to really encourage them not to do this with their lives. They've got to stay away. Sometimes what happens is the floodgate opens. They start borrowing money. They feel powerless. They keep going. I don't need to spend a whole bunch of time on that. But what I will say to you is that, yes, the borrower can easily become enslaved to the lender. And what's really important in that situation is that we understand the mentality of that destruction. Because what happens is ultimately they file bankruptcy or they quit paying and walk away, whatever it may be. Permanently tarnishes their credit record for life. There's a bunch of different ways people say, well, I filed bankruptcy 10 years ago and it's not even on my credit anymore. Nope. And you don't have any credit anymore. What was there is now wiped out and gone. And so you could be 36 years old or whatever, and you've got zero credit. That's why you can't borrow much. And folks, do not be flattered when Visa companies keep trying to get you to use their card. It's not because you're special. It's because their interest rates and their profit margin is so darn high, it almost doesn't matter who's got that card. The minute you go late, they instantly can charge you like 28 to 35% on that card for the remainder of the life of the card, period. Just because you had one bad month. Or two bad months. And I'm telling you, when you owe $3,500 and your interest is $1,300 a year, so if you pay $110 a month, you're only paying interest on $3,500. If you get my point. If you pay, $350 a month on a $3,500 balance, which is one tenth of it, it's still going to take you like 4 years to pay it off. If you make the minimum payment that they require on credit cards, which lowers with the balance, you will never pay it off ever under any circumstances. So it's important if you're using credit cards, you pay them off monthly. And I'm sorry to go into this too much, but I think some people need it. I think some people want it. I think there's a lot of people out there struggling. They're on super tight budgets and they get into a pinch. If you end up using credit in a pinch, you've got to have option A, B, and C to get that thing paid off, because you do not want to get stuck with that thing just sitting out there rotting, because it will destroy you. And that's what it's talking about. When you look the other direction, if you're a little more seasoned, say you're a little more experienced in life and you're at a point where maybe you have a reasonable, logical business opportunity or a reasonable, logical real estate opportunity, you can use debt if you're using it properly. And that is a very important thing. You want to shop rate. You want to shop mortgage fees. You need to look into all that stuff, even the cost of the appraisal and all that stuff. You want to be aware of it all. Again, it is your stewardship to God. I had a guy call me. I used to say, you can use debt for business and transportation and shelter if it makes sense. I had a guy call me who basically got scammed by some vending machine vending machine franchise. Absolute scandal. Folks, don't buy anything where they say, yeah, you know, I have the new super robot that makes, you know, lattes, and the company even helps me place it and all this stuff. You are getting ripped off first class. So this guy buys these, I think, $6,000 to $8,000 junky vending machines, and the company says they'll put them places for him. Well, they put them at the end of hallways in the back alley of a, or the back corner of a dentist's office or something, so the guy will never make money. And the guy basically spent $90,000 on these vending machines, which he found out later. They were charging him $6,000 to $8,000 a piece. He found out later he could pick the same things up on eBay for $100 or $1,000 a piece. And then, you know, long story short, they took all 90 grand of his money, and he was out. He was done. And he was calling me asking for all this advice. And I said, why'd you do that? He said, well, you said on your show, it's okay to use debt for business purposes. And I'm like, you know, apparently I have to preface that with a wise, good, effective business. And what I'm, you know, something like that, you need to have evaluated by somebody that knows better. And what happens is when you get a solicitor on the phone selling you these kinds of things, you know right away it's not a good deal if someone has to be on the other end of the line telling you that you need to buy it. That's the same with our business, folks. When solicitors are calling people trying to sell them coins, I mean, that's your first bad sign. It's one thing if you've worked with us and we're calling you back to finalize a deal, but it's another when you have a commissioned salesperson, and trust me, they all are. What happens is with all these situations is people get, and you know, man, I don't know. We just had a guy come in with stuff that was priced at levels I didn't even know was possible. And what had happened is they start with ads in like Parade magazine of $5 American gold eagles. Well, a $5 American gold eagle is a tiny little dime sized piece of gold, smaller than a dime. It's a tenth of an ounce. And then they'll run ads that have a loss leader price, which is cheap. So say you just say gold was $1,300 today. 10th ounce gold eagles typically carry a premium of about 10% because they're smaller. And so say gold's 130 today and our price is 143 per coin, and they might be at 130. Or I mean 140, so like $3 back. Just enough to pique some people's interest. And they'll only let them buy five. And then they, you know, they have, and then they have to pay shipping and whatever else. So once they get your name on a list and people tend to associate that with a good deal, they're like, oh, that company gave me a good deal. Then they start to sell you other things, other MS-70 gold coins and all kinds of stuff. And we get stuff in here that they charge, the commission salespeople charge, just beyond your wildest dreams. And the only coins that people are able to associate it with is the first batch they bought, which was a good deal. And so people automatically assume the rest of it's a good deal, and it's not. And so typically when someone's soliciting you, when someone's calling you, telling you what a great deal they have and you don't want to miss out, it isn't because they care about you so much they want you to have a great deal, okay? It's because they're making a commission. And if they're making a big commission, it's because there's too much profit in something. Our business, we've never paid a commission because in our gross profit, if you take all of our business throughout the entire year and you take the gross profit before expenses, it's 4.28%. After expenses, it's like 1.3%. So we have to do a high volume to make what we call a low margin. We call ourselves a high volume, low margin dealer. Another thing to keep in mind where I was dealing with a guy, I realize I'm bouncing around a little bit today, and I think some of these things are just things I'm cleaning up off my mind. I had a guy who wanted to, well, he came in and he sold a certain gold coin, And then he called back feeling bad because he, you know, it meant a lot to him. He'd worked hard to get it and all that. And I, and the thing that we talked about that I think he needed to really hear and understand was mostly his girlfriend, I think, was really giving him a hard time for selling it. But the thing you got to realize is when the buy-sell margins on this stuff are pretty thin, okay, in other words, just a couple percent, you can afford to buy and sell, okay? So if you have a bunch of gold with us or numismatic 20s or whatever they are and you need some money, it's as easy as just liquidating right there and right then. That's simple, okay? You don't have to be, you know, hyper calling the market and worrying about where it's at. Because simply put, what you're doing is coming back. You can come back and pick that item up at any time. If the market's down, you're going to save a little bit. If it's up, you're going to pay a little more. But our difference between our buy and sell on any given day is a couple percent. So you're really not eating a lot. So when you really feel like you're blowing it because you had to sell some of that stuff off, you're really not. It's replaceable. On top of that, when the market's truly hot, that's when you really want to sell it. I mean, obviously, if you're playing the short-term speculation, which isn't what it's about, but you know, I'm not gonna fool you. I mean, markets come and markets go. Things go up and things go down. The point of owning hard assets and precious metals is they are a liquid, anonymous, transportable, long-term, solid savings program. And I'm going to tell you, folks, I've got plenty of numismatic and plenty of bullion. And I save gold and I save silver and I save platinum and palladium myself. I love rare coins, okay? They go up and down. But overall, they go up. And as if when they're at times where they're going down, I consider it more of a buying opportunity and I just keep doing my best. I don't have unlimited funds to buy whatever I want, whenever I want. You know, people say, oh, it's a great buying opportunity that you should be buying. Well, typically people don't have unlimited resources to keep buying. But when the market constantly goes, you know, trends upwards, and it still is, despite the most incredible record-breaking growth in these indexes ever in the U.S., which you and I both know what comes next. I mean, we just know, okay? I can't tell you when, but I can tell you soon. You know, it's just a fact. Prepare yourself. Protect yourself. Be wise. Don't get caught up. There's all these stories and sayings where Warren Buffett was getting his shoes polished and he heard a single unwed mother say she was going after this to go buy stock, and he decided when unwed mothers on welfare are buying stock, it's time for me to sell. And the story goes that he just happened to sell off the day before the market crashed. Well, the truth of the matter is, if that was really JP or whoever I just said, Warren Buffett, and he sold off one day after having his shoes polished, and the next day the market collapsed, I don't think it's because of the advice from the girl. I think it's because Warren Buffett sold off a ton of his stock on one day and everybody freaked out and bailed out, you know, maybe, whatever. But the point is, to me, it's a long-term safe haven. It is a solid asset. It's something that everybody wants all the time. They desire it. They want it, okay? There's always a buyer for it. So that's what's important. It may not be, you know, the buyer, the price the buyer is willing to pay may fluctuate a little bit here and a little bit there. But in general, there's always a buyer. It's liquid, okay? And that's why it's good to have. It's anonymous, transportable. Folks, that is so important to have an asset that is anonymous and transportable and absolutely, completely, and totally liquid. As we get deeper and deeper into a society that is becoming more and more of a police state, I personally believe it's very important to be prepared. I also believe that there is a high likelihood that we will face some kind of a catastrophe in our lifetime. In other words, an EMP or a nuke or something's going to happen. there are rogue, crazy groups out there, maniacs, that would do it. One of them may be Kim Jong-un, the prime whatever he is of North Korea, the prime doorknob. He could very well do it. I think there's all kinds of biblical justification for us going that direction. It does seem like as the end times near, there is going to be more and more pressure from government organizations that are going to somehow blend an artificial religion in with the politics of the nation. For some reason, this pantheistic religion begins looking more and more like Islam, which is much more like Baal worship. Which is really interesting because that's the way that man always seems to go when they fall into sin. And why, I don't know. Maybe because the devil is real. And maybe that, you know, when men worship him, they get inspiration from him. And they know exactly what, why, where, and how they're doing it. And so I would say as believers, righteous believers, you should prepare yourself. You should secure your assets. You can have a vast, you know, groups of it in banks and things like that, but don't count on it forever. Banks go under, folks, and when they do, they take people down. I mean, the last big meltdown financially where everybody lost their money in the stock market, brokers, to make people feel better, were saying, well, at least you're not in it alone. You know, and I heard that so many times, it was really sad. We have to understand the dot-com craze was a one-time casino boom that was generated by transferring our addiction to debt globally, never to return, okay? Now what are we doing under Trump? We're basically doing the same thing. We're creating money on fire in the form of debt to show an inflated stock market, which makes Donald Trump feel excited. Well, Donald Trump comes from another era. He comes from an era where the Dow, the stock market, was real. I mean, it wasn't all puffed up phony baloney. Now it is. John Maynard Keynes, the architect of Keynesian economics, said the best way to destroy the capitalist system is to debauch the currency. By a continuing process of inflation, governments can confiscate secretly and unobserved an important part of the wealth of their citizens. So when it says by a continuing process of inflation, how can that be when it says secretly and unobserved? Well, the way inflation is simply an increase in the money supply. And the way that they do that is by continuously printing at the highest rate and highest pace ever done, which is consuming your ability to spend and buy. It's ruining your buying power as we speak, okay? It is being eaten up. It's being consumed gradually or rapidly, depending on how you choose to look at it. Precious metals-based assets are private, anonymous, transportable, and immediately liquid anywhere and anytime globally. And you do not want precious metals on paper. You need to hold physical metal. I mean, that's the only way to get it. We do specialize in portfolios. I've discussed this in the past over and over. We're good at it. We'll take a little time to put yours together. We've had some staff changes recently that are very necessary. Sometimes those are sad because you get attached to people, but then you find things that they were doing that are just, wow, over the edge and jeopardizing the business and sad. Not out of ignorance at all. Just intellectual laziness, I guess you'd call it, and unwilling to talk and communicate and learn. And so sometimes that's part of owning a business. It's not always fun. I always want my employees and to be my coworkers, to be my friends. So anyway, that's neither here nor there, but we will work to build your portfolio. If you know, I will say, folks, real neatly here, there's been a lot going on the last few months and even last few weeks, big time. I've had a lot of long hours, etc. If you've called about anything important and you haven't heard back from me, call again, leave another message. They'll get it on the desk. I won't even go into the details why I'm asking that, but I'd like to ask you to do so. If you have portfolios you want evaluated, give us a call. Let us look through them, help you, give you advice and guidance, especially in ever-changing markets. We do have the Christmas silver rounds in stock. Those are the ones that say Merry Christmas, not Happy Holidays. We have, like I said, pictures of the Nativity. We have Christian themes. We have, they're nice. And like I said, if you want to give a cool gift to somebody for Christmas, give them that. It's an ounce of silver. It trades for over the silver price, but not terribly, a few bucks more. And if you want to step that up, you can give them silver eagles from this year. Some people have traditions where they'll give a silver eagle every year to someone for Christmas. Or if you want to make it better, you can give them a proof silver eagle. Or if you want to do something cooler, give them a silver dollar each year from a year. You can't do it 100 years ago because there was no silver dollars in 1917, but there were silver half dollars. But you can give them a different date silver dollar. There's a lot of people that'll get 25 or 50 silver dollars, and we put them in airtight holders so you can handle them and people hand them out to people for Christmas. There, you just, folks, give them something of value, something of substance that they put in the drawer and forget about and get out later, and it's worth something, not something that's just going to end up in the trash. So Christmas is around the corner. God bless you all. Thanks for listening today. I realize it was a little abstract, but I appreciate you more than you'll ever know. Please pray for us. We really need it and appreciate it. God bless. Take care. We'll be back Wednesday. Bye-bye.